I mean, I know I always say it, but I mean, just the way we're competing is really, it's really fun to be a part of, especially with me not really doing everything I can, and Vadi as well, and George too. Like, guys are stepping up and helping this team win. And it's, like I said, it's really fun to be a part of.
That was Bo Bichette talking after the Blue Jays' 5-3 victory against the Kansas City Royals last night. Bo comes through with a 3-run triple with the bases loaded, of course, and he's dapping up Dalton Varsho there. Varsho with his 6th home run in the last 9 games. I'm Blake Murphy filling in for Jeff Blair today on Blair and Barker, joined, of course, by Kevin Barker. How you doing, man?
Good. How's it going?
Good I'm to good. See you. Yeah. It's nice to be here. Nice to be on your show instead of you coming on mine for a change. Mix it up here a little bit.
Absolutely. It's finally good to see that this show's gotten smarter. That's what we've been shooting for years now, and finally it's happened. So it's good to have you.
I'll do my best to live up to that. Smarter, better looking, whatever else we got to do here. Try to fill in best I can. Try to do the Jeff Blair giveaway. We are giving away Jays Dodgers tickets for this weekend later in the show, so make sure you stay tuned in for that. Kevin, 5-3 win last night. They've won 9 of their last 13. Another terrific performance for Yusei Kikuchi. I know you guys spoke yesterday about how much you were liking how he was using the curveball. Again, we saw a lot of that slower breaking ball again last night from Kikuchi.
Yeah, look, I don't think you can argue how good he is just because of the mechanic changes he's made and the repeatability of, you know, just being able to keep the fastball, the slow curveball, the slider when he wants to backfoot it, go down and away to a lefty. Like, when he wants to locate a pitch, he can now because he has confidence and he's mechanically sound enough to, you know, catch it out front and it's repeatable. And, you know, just sort of that ball out of the glove. I know that sounds baseball 101 and it's very simple sounding, but for a guy that had a lot of moving parts and, you know, you're trying to mentally just sort of rein it all in and just be able to repeat it. And when the catcher pushes that button and he wants a certain location with that pitch and you can actually have it go there, you know, and now he's starting to maintain that velocity, which you just don't see a ton of lefties throwing that hard that consistently. And, you know, when he's throwing that 95-plus in glove side to a righty and go away with that and then two strikes, he can elevate that. And you mentioned that slow breaking ball. The difference is, right, when you speed a hitter up in there and then you can throw that 81, 82-mile-an-hour breaking ball and it's down and his misses have been really good with that right. I know Danny Jansen yesterday was doing a really good job of making sure that if you're throwing it and you miss with it, make sure, right, he's tapping it and he's getting a little wider depending on what the count is and those kind of things. They were on the same page. So, yeah, when you're pounding the zone, you're getting ahead, 15 out of 23, throwing strike one. The fastball was really good. The curveball was really good. Other than that sixth inning, right, I know he threw 11 more pitches, I think it was, after the Turner bad throw at first. Mm-hmm. You know, defensively, he's not the greatest on whether he's playing third or first. You know, they're asking more, I think, from him offensively than they are at first base. It's just, I think him being able to overcome sort of the woes that happened behind him, just sort of mentally getting away from that and saying, I'm going to pick my buddy up. And, you know, again, the double he gave up was a good pitch. The homer he gave up was a good pitch, right? It's sometimes you make a good pitch and you get beat on it. Just, I think he's able now because of all those things I just mentioned, eliminating that and moving forward and getting some outs that he needs to get out. And, man, you know, it's just when you watch them play offensively, if they can score runs because of their rotation, I mean, their rotation is elite. Like, it's – well, I don't think we talk about that enough. Like, it is World Series worthy. Like, it really is. Just the things they do, you know, with the pitching and who they can go to now because of the quality starts and the quality of length that the rotation's given them. How many rotations have a Rodriguez as their fifth guy? Like, I know he's throwing a bunch of pitches in a short amount of time, but if they can ever figure out how to strike one, strike three, efficient action in three pitches because of the stuff, I mean, again, it's just elite kind of stuff. So, you know, it is, again, we talked about this in spring training. We talked about this at the end of the season last year. We're still talking about it. It's all about the lineup. And again, they scored 5 runs. What are they? They're 10-1 when they score 5 or more. That's sort of the sweet number, right, is 5 runs. Just imagine if they could consistently score, say, 6 or 7. I mean, I know it's a lot to ask, but, man, if they could ever do that just because of the way they pitch, that's something else.
Yeah, you mentioned the pitching. We'll come back to the hitting. Again, nice night for Varsho. Bo comes up in that big spot. You mentioned the length from Kikuchi and just the quality of this rotation in general. Last year, they were the only team in baseball that had 4 guys make 30-plus starts. So you already got the kind of durability that no other team really has in the rotation, other than maybe the Mariners last year. They were the only team in that conversation. But now you're talking about length. We knew Berríos could go deeper into games, Gausman, Bassett. How important is it for you as Kikuchi takes this next step that we see him getting deeper into games with a little more ease? He had four innings last night where he threw 11 pitches or fewer to get through the inning. So even though he had trouble in that six, he was very, very efficient up to that point.
Yeah, also you see, like, if they have a big inning, right, offensively, they score three runs, and he comes back, and I think he had a six-pitch inning, right? It's that little, how quickly can I get him back in the dugout so they can score more runs, right? I think that's the graduation part of this. And again, I get back to that. It's not the easiest thing for a dude that's been paid and trying to get paid again to make big-time mechanical changes because it's going to make you better. Mm-hmm. It's hard to buy into that. And as quickly as he's bought into it, and now you're actually seeing him go out there and being able to throw strike one, being able to be unpredictable with strike one, right? That's a big deal, right? I know he throws hard, and I know he's locating that, and he's got good rhythm to it, and he's doing a little vinegar, right? It's I got a good one. I'm going to show it to you because I don't think you can hit it. And then being unpredictable with that and then being efficient with strike three and just having action as quickly as you can have it, taking the sting out of some bats when you need to with the slow stuff, trusting your defense, like everything that goes into it. And me and Jeff have had this conversation. When are they going to start talking about re-signing him? I know, again, do you do it in the regular season? I don't think there's ever a time to do it with a guy that's earned it. Like, again, I just mentioned all the things that's went into just the evolving into what he is now. Where does this grow in trees? I don't care how old he is. Like, you know, it just seems like how hard he's throwing, consistently throwing that hard, being able to throw quality pitches now. And I would assume it's not going to cost you a ton of money because of how old he is, I would think. You know, with what they don't have and the guys that they're counting on that are getting older, man, you would think sooner or later they're going to have to start having a conversation on re-signing him, no?
And it's not like 32 is incredibly old to sign a guy to, you know, a three-year extension,
absolutely,
right? A starter who's showing you he can give you some length. I think it probably sends, and you know better than I would in this case, but they signed him 3 years ago and said, hey, trust us on these changes we want to make. Trust us on this process. Didn't go that well the first year, went a little better the second year. Now you're starting to see it. Now you reward a guy like that.
Absolutely.
I think sets a good precedent, sends a good message. The other part of it, too, is if you were looking long-term, if you're Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, and you're looking at it and it's like, okay, well, Kikuchi's contract's up after 2024. We got this guy and this guy and this guy in the system. They're all injured anyway. Mm-hmm. We don't know when we're going to see Ricky Tiedemann again. Brandon Barriera is far away. Landon Moraitis, who they drafted this past year and is one of their top pitching prospects, he's going to undergo an MRI now. It's not as if there are guys champing at the bit there to take Kikuchi's spot next year, too.
Yeah, it's almost too, you know, what's going to happen to Bo and Vladdy? Like, are you going to have to trade one of those two, right? And when do you have to trade them? And is it worth re-signing an older veteran pitcher because you just may not be there with your organization? Look, we have no idea what the process is and what they're thinking and how long they think they have to make a little run at this. We just know how long Bo and Vladdy's here on the terms that they're here on them. And, you know, again, just the way Vladdy's been looking and what Bo's trying to do to get paid and how much he's going to be asking for and, you know, can you afford them both? Like, there's a lot going on there. And does it make sense to re-sign an older veteran lefty? Again, I just don't think that stuff grows on trees, man. It's, you know, it's like, again, I'm sure there's a reason why they brought in Rodriguez and wanted to give him a little bit of money over 5 years to sort of bridge the gap to the guys you were talking about there. But still, like, to have a righty-lefty combo right there, right after Bassett's getting a little bit older and, you know, Gausman's thrown a lot with two pitches. Like, it's Berríos, we all know, is really good. It's going to take the ball every 5 days. But, man, it's sort of when you've sort of set the precedent when it's pitching and defense first and you got a dude that does what you say Kikuchi does and has earned it, like you mentioned. I just don't know how you don't have a conversation. Maybe they have.
And what's the worst-case scenario? You sign a guy, and then you decide you got to turn and go down a different path or a different timeline. The market for really good left-handed pitching on the trade market, if you got a guy, you don't sign him just to trade him, obviously, but you're always going to be able to turn around and get something back for your pitchers. You mentioned Bo and Vlad in there. On the offensive side, they did score five runs. They did move to 10-1 when they can score five runs.
Yeah.
Bo Bichette comes up big in a spot there. So they load up the bases. There's one out. He gets down 1-2 at one point, and he was I want to go through the whole at-bat with you. So he ends up taking, as everyone saw, a 2-2 slider kind of right on the outer edge, and he takes it to right center field for a triple. What did you see throughout that at-bat? I know you had mentioned last night on Jay's Talk, hey, he didn't work his two-strike approach the way you'd normally see because the bases were loaded, because it was a big spot.
Yeah, look, I think the situation sort of dictates what you're trying to do and how you're feeling. And I had a conversation with him a couple of days ago when I was in the clubhouse and asked him, how does he feel mechanically? Because, you know, he just mentioned in that little hit there starting the show that they haven't been doing what they expect to do. And you would think that sort of starts with the mental grind of finding your mechanics and, you know, lots of parts. Kick it to your ear, you know, twirling it behind your ear with your barrel and trying to catch that out front and, you know, keep it fair and hit it as hard as you want to hit it. Not the easiest thing to do. And he told me mechanically he's never felt better. And then you see him yesterday sort of going away because of what the situation is trying to, you know, sort of dictate what he's trying to do to what baseball is to get it in the air right with some backspin and doesn't think he can do that with a true strike approach just because the sinker, right? It's the sinker, it's the slider down and away. You know, it's a pitcher's pitch. You got to be able to get off your backside a little bit more, catch that out front a little bit more, stay through it a little bit more to get it in the air, right? You're basically hitting it and throwing it in the air, creating a little backspin, and at the very least, you know, that's a sac fly. So I just think that's kind of cool that a guy actually sort of says, look at the scoreboard. You know, I do this normally with two strikes. I can't do this because who's on the mound and what the guys around me aren't doing. I sort of need to try and come up with a big hit here and actually have it play out is, you know, kind of nice just to see sort of, I still think your best hitter doing things in big time games on the road to give a pitcher a little bit of breathing room so every pitch doesn't matter the way it has mattered. So they need more of that. Like it's just, you know, to say the least that, you know, it's just more hits like that and more quality at bats. And I don't want to say fight. That sounds very hockey-ish. But, you know, it's just that common sense thing occasionally that if I do the same thing over and over again and it ain't working, let's try something else. And I think that's sort of what you saw yesterday from Bo, and it worked out. And that's kind of nice to watch.
Yeah, sitting all over that slider as well. You know, the 1-1 pitch he got was a sinker, kind of a little center cut, and he was early on it. It's like, okay, well, he's looking for the slower stuff.
You can't get that in the air, right? That's a sinker. It's a little bit down. Like, it's just, it's common sense that because of what the situation is and who is where on the basis and what you're trying to do and who's not doing things around you, it's just, it's common sense. And sometimes you don't use your brain to the fullest, and it's nice to watch a guy actually do it, and it worked, and hopefully we see more of that because they're going to need it.
So that was a pretty good slider from Singer, and he just takes it. Singer also threw a slider to Dalton Varsho that it didn't get where he wanted it. He was trying to bring that, you know, in and low to Varsho. It stayed up on the plate. Varsho jumps all over it. Sixth home run in the last 9 games. No Blue Jay did that all of last year. Six home runs in any 9-game stretch. How much are you liking what you're seeing from Varsho approach-wise right now?
Yeah, how can you not? Like, I think it's about the first two at-bats. The first two at-bats didn't go the way he wanted it to go. He forgot about those. Like, you can tell that every at-bat has its own little different approach. Like, he is thinking about not so much where my feet are at, where my stride separation's going, where my bat path is. You know, you can actually see him not thinking about it, which is kind of nice to sort of watch. Every at-bat has its own challenges. And, you know, for him to go up and just sort of think about it, you know he got me the first couple of times. He's still got to get me the third time. And if he misses, you know, you can make a good pitch, get me out. He's like most humans that are at the plate facing guys who can add and subtract and locate secondary stuff. But when you miss because you're confident and you're mechanically sound and you're balanced and you have great rotation, and now you have better separation between the foot and the hands, and you're seeing the ball really well because of that. It's, you know, when he's pulling the ball in the air, man, he's got a lot of power. So, you know, that's one of the things, right, is just when is that going to sort of the, you know, the dam break with a bunch of guys doing that, right? It's the, you know, you look at the stats, and I looked this up because I think this is very intriguing. You know, the Orioles, we always sort of compare, you know, lineups and youth and, you know, lack of experience, and does it matter? You just look at sort of what the Blue Jays are doing, and this is sort of what Varsho did with, you know, hitting with runners on base, okay? The Blue Jays are, they've hit 7 home runs this year with runners on. The Orioles have hit 16. That's first in baseball. So what are they? That's 11 more homers than the Blue Jays have hit. The difference, why I wanted to bring this up, is the Blue Jays have 3 different hitters that have hit those 7. The Orioles have 8 different hitters who have hit that 16. That's the difference, right? It's just sort of how do you get length and those big-time at-bats. Don't always even have to be a guy standing at second or third. just anywhere on the bases, right, with having that quality at bat, you have three swings, you have three strikes. Just having those consistent quality at bats to where you're trying to do damage. And Don Mattingly, John Snyder, like you name a coach, you name Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro, everybody that's ever come on anybody's show always says the exact same thing. Get your pitch, right? Something you can do damage on until you get to two strikes, and then it's a crapshoot because you're fighting, right? You're clawing, you're trying to do everything you can do just to put barrel to baseball. But that's the thing, right? That's the difference between those teams. And then I mentioned you have elite starting pitching, and you're trying to have an offense catch up and sort of meet in the middle. That, I think, is how you do it, right? It's just those quality at-bats with guys on base to get the ball in the air, to hit the ball hard to the pull side. And, you know, it's sort of nice, again, to have Dalton kind of just buying into, you know, everything where you're hearing him watch video on a plane, you know, about his good swings and just that mindset of good stuff. It's not, you know, it's one thing to go in a clubhouse or in a batting cage and always think about the bad things you're doing instead of sort of sometimes that muscle memory of how does it look when it's good? How can I just mentally visualize that to where I go to the plate and I'm not thinking about it anymore? I've done it so much. I've visualized it on the plane and, you know, on the on-deck circle. Now I just walk to the plate and it's sort of, dare I say, see ball, hit ball, which is what nobody ever wants to do anymore. So it's just kind of nice to watch him have three strikes and use all three of them to its fullest. And you better make a good pitch, because if you don't, what is it? It's 348 or whatever it was in the last – what was it? 348 in his last seven games with four homers and RBIs. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah, and that one last night, I mean, against the wind to right field. Yeah. He hit the heck out of that thing. Yeah. You mentioned, you know, watching the video on the plane and things like that. We've heard from guys like Bo Bichette in the clip as we came on. We've heard about, you know, Varsho talking to George Springer. These guys kind of telling him exactly what you're saying. Hey, wash the other stuff away for a second. Let's remember who you are. Let's remember you hit 27 home runs 2 years ago.
You've talked to enough people. You know, it's not the easiest thing to do. No. Like, it's not when you've tried so much, sort of like Vladdy's going through that, Springer's going through that, where it's just, you know, you do all those things off the field and it's working, and the, you know, the bat path and the shoulders being square to the baseball and the ball's ending up where you want it to go. And then you step in the batter's box, it's just the opposite of that. Like, you know, we've seen Dalton sort of that way, right? Where, you know, everything that you're selling off the field is translating. And when you get on the field, it's just the opposite of what's happening. And it just, again, it's kind of nice, I'm sure, because I've been there and a lot of players have been there where, you know, you're just trying to find the sweet spot. Everything is connected. It starts from the ground up, and, you know, his pace is good. He's seeing the ball well. His finish, he's getting to it. It's free and easy. It doesn't look like he's trying to force distance, which a lot of people are trying to do. I mentioned that when I was watching Vladdy in spring training. That was the separator. It just looked like it was free and easy. Ball was jumping off his bat, and it was going way over the fence. Now it's just the opposite of that. So, you know, hopefully, again, it gets back to those Orioles numbers where a bunch of dudes are hitting homers with runners on base instead of just three guys.
An Orioles team that, by the way, is calling up another top prospect today in Heston Kerstad. They never run out.
That's crazy.
So there's two components to that, right, of hitting a home run with guys on base. One, you got to hit the home run, but the other is you got to have guys on base. And that's something that at the top of the order has still been a little bit of a challenge for the Blue Jays. Right now, George Springer had an 0-for-5 night last night. His batting average now down below 200 in the early going here. What are you seeing from George Springer at the plate?
Yeah, he looks slow. I mean, it looks late. It looks like his start is not on time. And, you know, he's an ambusher. He is an educated guesser. And to be both of those, you have to start on time. There has to be – when he's going really well, you can obviously watch him. There's a separation. It's almost like his swing is in two parts without stopping the momentum. It's almost like I get it started soon enough, I get my front foot down, right, just about ready to throw my hands towards the baseball, making a positive move, but I can do it on time because of the two things I mentioned. He likes to swing early, and he's an educated guesser. So basically, until you get to two strikes, you're looking in like that little tiny window for either a breaking ball or a fastball, and to do that, you have to be on time, because why you have to be on time is you don't want to swing at something else. Because if you do, it looks the way it looks now. Like he's in between, he's jamming himself. You know, now some people would say he's pushing 35. He'd be 35 in September. You know, and what was that stat? He hasn't hit more than 17 home runs on a fastball since 2019. You know, that's in his 30s. He hasn't hit that many in his 30s. So you could see sort of even more reason that the older you get, the more you have to start on time or sooner to be able to get that little separation so you can be the best you can be at ambushing and as an educated guesser. Not the easiest thing to do. Edwin Encarnacion was the best educated guesser I've ever seen, but he had to sort of evolve into that. And it was, if I'm looking for this, I can't swing at something else. Because if I do, my swing's going to look all out of place. And then I'm going to go off the field and start thinking about I need to fix something mechanically, and it ain't that. So it's sort of like, you know, you got that fine line of you got to be walking that fence a little bit when it comes to do. If I'm going to do this, I got to start soon enough. I got to have that little pause so I can see the ball longer, so I'm not chasing something I don't want to chase. And, you know, hopefully it's, again, we talked about if they can just sort of, I don't say even meet in the middle. I'm just not sure that's possible because how good they're off their rotation is. Get it close to that. Just give them a little couple weeks at a time where they're carrying the team and can give the rotation a little bit of breather. So hopefully he can work on that, be a little bit more on time so he can see the ball a little bit better, start hitting some balls to the pull side in the air, which is what he's trying to do.
When you look, we don't need the numbers to back up something like bat speed, something like how guys age. You're seeing a lot mechanically. But what we can see from the numbers also shows he's catching the ball at the back part of the plate a lot more often. So his swing's still kind of on the way down with that attack angle. Does that to you suggest he's trying to wait a little bit more, like the fact that he is catching the ball on the back part of the plate instead of out front?
Yeah, see, if now I don't always like the you know.
I know. That's
some of the khaki stuff is a little – you know, it can overwhelm you. Yeah. But stuff like that is really good stuff because that actually could tell you, you know, basically what I'm seeing is if your bat looks slow, why does it look slow? And if somebody can walk up to me and tell me exactly what you just told me, then that would tell me exactly what I'm feeling. And now I can go in a batting cage or I can actually mentally think about this when I'm on the on-deck circle. Time that guy up. Make sure I'm early instead of late. I'd rather be too early than too late because if I do, it's like you mentioned, right? You start your swing back too far. You're catching the ball too deep. He wants to do damage to the pull side in the air. You can't do it by starting your swing back. It just for me, doesn't look like right. Everything's connected enough that the bat will be quick enough. He can consistently catch the ball out front doing it that way. So he needs to be a little steeper with his barrel to be able to have a little bit better contact out front to get the ball in the air. So I don't think it's a tough fix. I just think he's got to buy into, I'd rather be early than late. I'd rather be early than late. I'd rather be early than late instead of being on time. That again, right? When you get a little older, I got a little older. I had to do this. I was in the Mexican League. Guys were throwing in low 80s and I was late. And I had to learn, you know, if you want to stick around a little bit longer and not be pushed out of the game, you got to do things, right? You got to have two-strike approaches, 0-0, and you have to do what you have to do. So I think he's sort of in this little bit of this window where just think early. If I start early because I have talent and I have a track record, everything will be fine. And, again, I think it's just – it sort of looks this way because the first two guys are looking this way, right? It's you know, Springer's looking his way, and Vladdy looks like he's taking three Big Daddy hacks. Well, when your swing is long and you're swinging from your hip a lot, that just, you know, it's, again, that's why you hear your best hitter coming on and saying, you know, it's good to see other guys picking us up because the first three guys. And he called them by name, which is, you don't always hear that, you know, especially in Toronto. Like, when's the last time you heard a star of a team calling dudes out? Like, he basically did that last night. And you got to love it. Hey, he did it in a nice way, and it's an obvious way. But it's one thing to know it. It's another thing to hear it from your best hitter. And I love kind of things like that, right? It's sort of basically, hey, they're doing their job. Let's not be afraid to come to the party. So hopefully they do and they start scoring more runs because, again, they have an elite rotation good enough to win a World Series. It's just how do they fill in the blanks everywhere else.
Yeah, I love that level of accountability as well. George Springer knows he's hitting a .198. Vlad knows he's got a .718 OPS or whatever. They know they got to start doing their part. And like you said, kind of meet them in the middle.
Yeah.
They'll get the chance tonight against Michael Wacha. It's Kevin Gausman on the other side. I will continue to set that one up through the show. We're going to take a break here. We've got Dan Shulman coming up at 2:30. We got Gary Varsho coming on with us at 3 o'clock, which should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Talk about Dalton's hot streak here, some of the mechanical, maybe mental changes. I'm just going to sit back and let you guys talk about hitting. I don't need to be
great. He's a great talk.
Yeah. And then Tim Kirkjian joining us at 3:30 of ESPN. He had a podcast out today with Terry Francona, which I haven't got a chance to listen to yet, but should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So we'll take this break, and we'll talk to Dan Shulman on the other side. I'm Blake Murphy filling in for Jeff Blair. Blair and Barker continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Blair and Barker. I'm Blake Murphy filling in for Jeff Blair. Kevin Barker still alongside me. Jays win 5-3 last night. 9 of their last 13. We'll see if they can win a fifth series in a row here as this one continues in Kansas City. 7:40 tonight, Kevin Gausman against Michael Wacha. You'll hear Dan Shulman on the call for that one. He joins us now. Dan, how's it going from beautiful Kansas City?
It is going great. Had a nice little walk, went over to the Power and Light District and just kind of checked that out. Had some nice pancakes this morning. I'm finished my prep for the day. Everything is good.
How about barbecue? Yeah, barbecue there?
I'm not really a big barbecue guy, to be honest with you. And I know that's one of the many ways I disappoint you, but
that's the only one. That's the only way.
Yeah. It's funny because the first thing, like literally the first thing anybody in Kansas City says to you when you say, you know, like the other team's broadcasters or whatever, oh, so where are you going for barbecue? It's like the first thing they say. Yeah. And it's just a little too heavy, a little too messy. I think I'd sleep for a few hours after I ate it, so I'm going to try to avoid it.
You never heard of a post-game meal? What's the big deal? I mean, I've done Kansas City only as a fan before, but if it's anything, you know, I've heard the media meal there is great. It sounded like the Memphis Grizzlies on the NBA side. They've always got barbecue for the media. You just pack a little to go, Dan. You're good.
All right. I'll try to get it to go tonight, and then I'll have to set an alarm for tomorrow morning. I don't think I'll wake up on my own. So.
You're the best.
You'll be all right, man. Okay, so game one of this series last night, really nice showing again from Yusei Kikuchi. You guys were all over it on the broadcast. That level of efficiency over those first five innings. I think in four of those innings, he needed 11 pitches or fewer. Man, it's been 2+ years now of seeing Yusei Kikuchi get to this level and figure out how to be the best version of himself. Is this the best version of him you've seen?
Yes, I think so. And because of the word efficiency, I mean, last year he was great too. Like 2 years ago, he walked 5.2 per nine innings. Last year was 2.6. He literally cut his walk rate in half last year. But I think with the weapon that the curveball has become, I think he's at his best right now because the slider's really good and he's not spraying the fastball. Like he's locating that fastball on the inside corner to righties over and over and over. And how many times can you think in the past him just letting it fly arm side and it's 1-0, it's 2-0 and that sort of thing. We haven't really seen much of the change up, a little bit here and there, and I'm sure he's going to keep working on it, but his main three pitches are so good that he can be one of the better starting pitchers in the game if he just keeps doing what he's doing. And if he can be efficient, so instead of, you know, 5-5 1/3, if it can be 6-6 1/3, 6-2/3, that sort of thing, that's even bigger because that helps the bullpen. And you know, I hate that every night on the air I have to say, well, these guys may be down tonight, but, you know, that this is the way it is in baseball. And you know, I don't know if we're going to get to this conversation. I think four of the eight guys are out of play tonight, at least three of them. So, and that's not Kikuchi's fault, obviously, but he went six. But, you know, being able to go 6-7 as opposed to 5-6 in the modern game, it's just huge.
Dan, you think there's any concern with any part of the pitching staff? I try to sit down and think about that. I don't, other than like the guys showing up late and, you know, them trying to work them in at the right time and the stuff is just, I guess, not at their A point exactly right now. Other than that, what is it?
I hear a couple of them had a lot of barbecue yesterday, to be honest with you. No, I think like, you know, Romano was late getting going. He looks like Jordan Romano, right?
Yeah,
he looks.
Yeah.
Jimmy Garcia looks like an all-star. I think Swanson's going to be fine. I, you know, if Mesa and Cabrera, the two lefties, neither of them have been consistently at their best. They've both had some hiccups. We've seen them both have a couple of good outings, but then that's kind of sandwiched between a couple of not so good outings. So, you know, maybe that would be the only thing. And they both got track records, so I think they're going to improve. It's interesting if you just like look at their And isn't it funny that you said it, Blake, this team's won 9 of 13. They've won 7 of 9 and 9 of 13. And I still think among a pretty sizable portion of the fan base, there's a it doesn't feel like it kind of vibe about them. And maybe it's because they're not scoring a zillion runs. But if you look at the last 13 games, it's like 5-3, 5-2, 4-3, 5-1, 5-4. Like every game's like the same. You know, and they keep scoring 4 or 5 runs and they keep winning most of them. But because of that, their pitching's got to be really, really good. Their starting's been great. The thing I'm most curious about, other than the unfortunate news that a lot of the, you know, that Tiedemann, Marutis, and Barriera are all getting their arms checked out, but is Manoah, like the clock's ticking. And I think it's about 2 more weeks, and then they have to decide, are they going to bring him back or are they going to option him to Buffalo? He's on a 30-day injury rehab right now. And if they bring him back and put him in the rotation, my guess is Yariel Rodriguez goes to the bullpen. My guess is Bowden Francis goes to Buffalo, and they stretch him out as a starter. And it would just be another option, another weapon for them. So, you know, I know we've all kind of tucked Manoah away a little bit because of how long it's been since he was the Alek Manoah we first came to know. But within a couple of weeks, I think it's, you know, going to be interesting. No matter which way it goes, it's going to be interesting for this team.
Yeah, May 6th is the date you're looking at there for his 30-day rehab will be up. He's expected to start again at AAA either tomorrow or Thursday. That still seemed up in the air as of yesterday. You mentioned Yariel and Bowden there and who could be down or not down tonight, Dan. Do you think there's any flexibility coming up in terms of how they'd use Bowden, or is that going to be a pretty strict handcuffed to Yariel until we see, you know, the ability to maybe go 5 there?
I think, you know, in case of emergency break glass, like let's say Gausman, for whatever, you know, got hit by a comeback or had a rough night, whatever, and if he's out in the third, they have no choice. They have to put Bowden, in my opinion, they have to put Bowden Francis in there. Just looking at their bullpen right now, Romano's worked 3 of the last 4. Garcia's worked 3 of the last 4. Again, it's an unwritten rule, but go find me evidence of guys who have thrown 4 times in 5 days this year. It just doesn't happen anymore. So I'm assuming those two are down. And then Sunday, Richards threw 33 and Pearson threw 32. Can they come back on 1 day's rest after that? Maybe, but not for 33 or 32 more. It would be short. So I think, Blake, if they had to, they would use Francis in another spot. But I think as long as things are going well, they'd like to keep him, you know, in a piggyback situation with Yariel Rodriguez. But, you know, baseball has a way of disrupting your plans, but hopefully not tonight. Hopefully Gausman, who's trending in a positive direction, you know, can give him 6, maybe 7. I mean, he looked pretty good. I just thought the Yankees had really good at-bats against him, but and they made him throw a lot of pitches. But hopefully if he can, you know, give him 6, maybe pitch into the 7th. And a big key tonight for me, because they don't have Garcia and Romano, I'm assuming, is they got to score. You want to have a little bit more of a cushion and a comfort zone going into the late innings when you don't have your top 2 relievers. So this is one of these games where the offense can really help out the bullpen and make John Schneider's life a little bit easier.
Dan, I was listening to Bo after the game last night. He was calling a couple of guys out by name. It's odd that you hear that, right? I mean, he did it in a nice way. He wasn't rude about it. He was just stating the obvious that, you know, including himself, like the first 2 guys in front of him aren't doing their job the way they expected them to do to start the season. And, you know, that's urgency, right? When you hear the best hitter sort of mentioning your name out loud, you sort of look at yourself in the mirror a little bit differently. I know I would. It's just, you know, you're a human being. And I wonder, the people you've talked to, who do you think is closer to being able to do that, Vladdy or George?
Vladdy.
Yeah.
I would say. Yeah. Because, you know, we're not seeing a lot of power. We're still seeing hard hit balls. We've actually seen him dump a few base hits in there, like some good luck for him. Instead of, you know, hit 114 mile an hour, 1 hopper to the third baseman, but then dump one into right center for a base hit. So I think his luck is, if you want to put it that way, is evened out a little bit. But I think his at bats, you know, and you can see it, Kevin, way better than I can. Mm-hmm. You know, he chases a slider away and he steps out of the box and he's upset with himself. You can see it. And he's made corrections within at bats. And I thought he took a big walk last night early in the game, which I thought was really impressive. It was in the inning. It was right before Bo tripled in the 3 runs because I think it was a 3-2 pitch and he's got a couple of men on and he wants to drive in runs, right? That's what they pay him to do. So, but I think he's in a decent place, not a great place,
yeah,
but I think he's in a decent place right now. You know, George hit home runs in each of the first two games, hasn't homered since. I think has two doubles since. Like, we're just not seeing the ball come off his bat with a lot of authority right now. He's one of the guys who we know is under the weather right now. He's been sick for a few days. You know, so who knows if that's a part of it. But if you ask me to pick between those two, I think that Vladdy is closer. And it's just something I thought of today, and I don't think it'll happen today, and I wouldn't ask the question today. But I wonder if in a few days, if status quo is still status quo, if they start tinkering with the order a little bit. And I don't know what that would mean. Would that mean, do you know, they did this last year, right? George dropped down to four and even five, I think, for a little while. You know, do you put Bo at the top? I mean, do they get crazy? Not crazy. Do they think outside the box and, you know, like Biggio's at the top against righties, Clement against lefty? I don't know. I don't know what they, if they're thinking of anything, what they might do. You know, do you move Varsho? I kind of want to leave Varsho right where he is and not put too much of a target on him for the other teams. But they're scoring a decent number of runs. Like, they're scoring four or five a game. But we all know they need more from the top three in the order if they're really going to have the kind of season they want to have.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I was wondering the same thing. So I texted an individual that's around the team and I asked the exact same question. And the answer I got was no, not now. And I think the obvious answer would be because George is late and Vladdy is long, moving them in the order, would that change those two things? And I think that's sort of where the organization is at as a whole is, right, you don't want to add that mental hurdle of, uh-oh, I just got moved down in the order, right. And it's woe is me kind of thing. You got such an elite rotation. It's just, how do you get the offense close to meeting in the middle? I ain't even saying they can meet in the middle. Get them close to meeting in the middle. How good would this team be? I think that's sort of the dilemma, right? And moving around the order, it's just very hard to do that. You know, you've been around baseball long enough. It's just a hard decision. Like, what's the right decision? You just don't know what that is, right?
No, it is because, and every manager will tell you that. So unless people think every single manager was wrong, they'll say to you, if we make too big of a move too early, the players will think it's a sign of panic or something like, you know, we've all heard managers say that before. But yeah, you know, it's funny you use the term meet in the middle because I think, and again, it doesn't feel that way, but they're scoring five runs almost every game. If you look at this 9-4 stretch, I believe in those 13 games, they've scored five runs. They haven't scored more than five runs once in those 13 games, which is crazy, but they've scored five runs eight times. Four runs twice, three runs twice, and one run once. So in 10 of the 13 games, they've scored four or five runs. And yes, they have to do more. Yes, they have to score more, all of that, 100%. But I'd rather them score four or five every game than get shut out and then score eight, get shut out and then score eight. Because, you know, if you get shut out and then score eight, you're a 500 team. You score four or five every game with the kind of pitching staff they've got. They're, in my opinion, they're more than a 500 team because they're going to hold. They're going to hold teams down with their pitching.
You know what it is, Dan? It's fans watching the Blue Jays. It's who ain't scoring them. I think that's what it is. Yeah. And who ain't help scoring them. I think that's what it is, right? It's the guys that everybody, you know, even the GM was saying the core is going to take us. The first four guys are going to, you know, take us and help us end up where we're going to end up. And it just started out the way it has, sort of. Yeah, I think people are just, I guess, worried because they don't want to, I think, maybe waste the rotation is the wrong way to say it. But, boy, it does feel that way. It really does. And that's what I think it is.
Well, and everybody remembers 2021, and everybody remembers Teoscar and Lourdes and you know, all the runs they scored. And everybody's aware of when Bo and Vladdy are free agents. Like, everybody knows all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I understand why there's some angst among the fan base. Like, I'm not denying that at all. We all sit there and go, man, they should have, could have, you know, that sort of thing. But I'll tell you this, like, every season, I think every team's fans look at the games. They focus more on, man, they should have won that game rather than, man, they easily could have lost that game. And I think the Blue Jays have more, man, they easily could have lost. Like, they're doing just enough to win more often than not. I don't think they've, what's their record? 13-10?
Yeah.
Right, 13-10, yeah. I don't think they've quite played like a 13-10 team. Like, you know, the bullpen's been bumpy, and we all know it'll get better, and they've got guys with track records. But the bullpen's been bumpy. Gausman had a couple tough ones. At the beginning, Bowden Francis had two rough starts. The top few guys aren't hitting like they can. They've had a tough schedule, and they're 13-10. So I choose to look at it like they put a couple of wins in the bank. But if they're going to keep playing at this clip, I think we'd all agree they do have to play better. I think the bullpen's got to be good, and the offense definitely needs to continue to improve.
You're a great salesman, Dan.
not for barbecue. I failed on it.
Yeah, well, that stuff sells itself,
it
you know?
Does.
Yeah, you don't need to come pitch me on barbecue. I'm there already. But Dan, you're right. They're 13-10. They've been outscored by 11 runs, right? And when we talk about, what should their record be, that's one of the things we tend to look at. I guess there's another factor here, too. And, if you're staying in ball games and you're winning ball games, but you're 22nd in run scoring overall, which they are, they're 22nd in runs, I wonder, too, if there's a longer term kind of effect of, every time your pitchers go out, those are high stress situations, right? Nobody gets to pitch with a 6-7 run cushion. No, you don't get to, you laid out the way the bullpen could look tonight. You don't get to turn it to Meza and Cabrera and comfortably be like, okay, you know what? They need to get some work in. They need to get some confidence. This is a team right. with a bunch of lefties, and we got a 6-7 run cushion. They haven't played like that. So I wonder if there's an impact of that on your pitching staff as well.
I would say yes. It feels like stretch run games already, right? Like you're playing when everything is so tense and so important. One thing they've done better, and again, they're not scoring that many more runs, but in this last 13 game stretch, they're scoring them earlier. And again, I'll defer to Kevin always because he played, but like there was a stretch on that first road trip where they were down 2-0, down 1-0, down 3-1, whatever. Now they're scoring, and we'll have a graphic on it tonight. It's been a big turnaround. They used to do all their damage in like 7, 8, 9 when they were trailing, and now they're scoring early. Two of the three games in the last series, in San Diego, they were up like 4-0 after 2 innings or something, and hung on to win. Last night, Bo, I think it was the 3rd inning, I guess, when he hit the 3-run triple, like they're scoring earlier. And you guys both watch a lot of baseball. You've both heard me say many times they had only scored 1 run or 2 runs in 11 first innings, that sort of thing, and what it was last year. So yes, I think it's an issue. There are too many close games, but I think psychologically, at least they're scoring earlier, and I think that makes John Schneider's decisions easier, and I think it relaxes everybody. And there's one other aspect of the offense that we haven't talked about, but I'm sure you guys have and will, and is there are some guys pushing at Buffalo right now, and none of those are easy decisions as well, because it's great, bring up this guy, but then there has to be a corresponding that guy, and I'm not sure everything is as cut and dried as we like it to be, but there are three guys down there pushing hard to get a call up. And, at some point, if need be, moves will be made.
Speaking of pushing hard, Clement and Schneider, how come they just don't write their name in the lineup every single day?
Well, so you've got Varsho. Okay, let's go back 2 weeks. You've got Varsho, Kiermaier, IKF, Biggio, Clement, Schneider. You've got those six guys. You've got room for four of them in the lineup every day. If you assume either Jansen or Kirk plays, and if you assume that Springer, Vladdy, Bo, and Turner are in the lineup, those six guys have four spots. Now, you can rest Springer, you can rest Turner, that sort of thing. So I think they're juggling a lot of things. Part of it is who's hot. Part of it is the matchup. Part of it is does a guy need rest? Part of it is how does it impact our defense? And is guys. There are certain pitchers they're more likely to sacrifice a little defense for offense. Gausman and Kikuchi, in theory, strike out more guys. More strikeouts, fewer balls in play. Fewer balls in play, maybe more likely to see Schneider in left and Varsho in center as opposed to something else. Not that Davis has done poorly in left. He hasn't at all. But you know what I mean. Instead of Varsho in left and Kiermaier in center. So, you guys know this is much more layered. But so to answer your question, if Clement and Schneider are in there every day, and let's say, by every day, I assume you're talking about like all the time against righties too, because we know they're going to play against lefties.
Absolutely.
So now you're putting, Biggio's going to be in there and Varsho's going to be in there. So now, just by process of elimination, we're left with Kiermaier and IKF. Like, I don't think they're going to sit anybody too much. I think they want to keep everybody fresh. I still think they're a little bit in the exploratory process as to what exactly they have. And listen, they contracts are contracts too, right? Like the you sign guys, and it's April the 23rd, right? It's not August the 23rd. If we're having this conversation August the 23rd, I think we're having a different conversation. But that's why even if you bring in a Relvis Martinez or a Addison Barger or Spencer Horwitz up to the team and into the conversation, it gets even more complicated. So I think, I don't know how you guys feel, and I know fans dissect every lineup and only look at it on the basis of how hot is that guy? Why is that guy in the lineup when he got hits yesterday? Mm-hmm. That's kind of a common way for people to look at it. But I think they're doing a nice job putting guys in favorable matchups, juggling offense, defense, getting guys rest whenever they can. But, you know, another three weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever, of consistent results, and they'll, you know, they'll start playing the hot guys more and more. But it's, you know, IKF's off to a nice start, I think. I mean, you look at the quality of his contact. He's hitting – he's not a power guy, but I know Blake could probably give you the number off the top of his head. He's hitting a lot of line drives from where I'm sitting, and he plays a nice defense, and he plays two positions. And, you know, I'm not sure who they would take out. Kiermaier will get some days off for a variety of reasons, and he's got to start hitting a little bit more. So if one guy's playing time was to suffer, maybe he would be the, you know, the sixth of those six. But I still think they're going to rotate the guys around kind of 4, 5, 6 days a week between that group until they sort it out.
Yep.
Dan, all this talk about defense, as I understood the scoring from last night's game, there's no such thing as an error anymore.
No,
so I don't know why we're talking about defense.
I could have hit 300.
Kevin, is it a conspiracy just to make offensive numbers look more inflated?
I have no idea. It's a terrible look, Dan. I don't know any other way to say it. Like, it's the big leagues. It's like the umpiring at the big league level. Clean it up. It's the big leagues. Like, just that's a bad look. The Turner throw, just you can hear it in Buck's voice. Like, he's just like,
he was,
crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that one, the IKF one at third, which was a hard hit ball, but IKF would be the first to tell you, I got to make that play. Mm-hmm. And then remember a couple of days ago in San Diego, I think it was San Diego. Oh, no, it was Stanton hit it for the Yankees to Bo. And it started as a hit, was changed to an error, and then went back to a hit, I think. I think it wound up as a hit. But I'm with you. It feels like the scoring is way different, and there are many, many people within the game who think it is a conspiracy that people are being told anything borderline, call it a hit. It's funny. It doesn't impact the number of runs being scored. The guy is at first base no matter what. It's just a scoring thing. It's just, you know, it raises the batting average a little bit. It might scratch out a few more RBIs. It's not helping the pitchers, that's for sure. But I don't like it either. I mean, you know, you heard Buck. He said he'd have been out by 15 feet if he made it. When his voice starts cracking, you know it's serious.
That's great.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Dan. Appreciate it.
You're the best, buddy.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a great day.
You too.
Here's a little one for you on the fielding thing. Last year in baseball, it was the highest fielding percentage in the history of baseball. We've been playing in baseball for 150 years. It's the highest fielding percentage. So either you're saying defense is the best it's ever been, or they're starting to fudge the error numbers a little bit, or both. I think Jeff Blair said with you guys last night, like, he's talked to scorers who get told, and anything 50-50, nudge it to the hit side. The league as a whole is only hitting 240.
Yeah.
They'd probably like that number.
I wonder, because they've eliminated the shift, they feel like they have to do this.
Yeah.
I wonder.
I mean, it's a related thing, right? They eliminate the shift in part because they want to get batting average up, and then batting average still isn't up enough. So like, hey, any of those halfway calls, make sure they're hits. I understand it a little more if you're the home team, but I don't know. If I'm the home scorer, I'm trying to make sure my pitchers, those runs aren't earned if they can be unearned.
Well, I mean, Perez has been around forever. I guess you could understand he's at home, he hits a borderline ground ball. I mean, anytime a good defender is waiting on the play at the big league level and does not make the play with a slow runner, that's an error.
Yeah.
Like, it's you don't even have to think about it. Like, you don't wonder. It's an error.
I couldn't believe it.
The throw from Turner, I mean, that's just enough to make you want to pull your hair out. I wish I was still a player, because I'd be in the big leagues, probably in cleanup, because I could hit 240.
Yeah, and no errors ever.
How about that?
No errors ever. All right. On the other side here, second hour, we're going to talk to Gary Varsho, former Major League outfielder, father of Dalton Varsho, of course. We'll talk to Tim Kirkjian, of ESPN. And we're going to give away some Blue Jays Dodgers tickets for this weekend down at Rogers Center. Have a little trivia, give you yesterday's answer. I always find it so funny when I look in the text line, there are a bunch of typos. I don't know if your guess counts if it's a typo, but just double check that stuff. Gary Varsho and Dodgers tickets in the trivia game for you guys. Second hour as Blair and Barker continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Blair and Barker. Jays win last night, 5-3. They'll do it again tonight in Kansas City, 7:40. Dan Schulman on the call, who was just with us, with Buck and Arden, Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And Jeff Blair will be back with you in my spot alongside Kevin Barker for Blair and Barker, Jays talk post game. So you only have to deal with me for the 2 hours here, not post game. You're all right.
Pretty good so far.
Feel all right. Not quite Dalton Varsho levels comfortable at the dish right now, but like you said, nobody is. Let's talk to his father about it. Gary Varsho, former Major League outfielder and bench coach, joins us now. Gary, thank you for doing this. What a time to be a Dalton Varsho supporter.
Well, it's gone on for about 28 years now, so we're excited at this early season. It's early, it's April, but having good at-bats, much better than early on in the season. So it's a long year, but really like how he's progressed, and basically there's a lot of people in Toronto that are responsible for his early success here in April.
Yeah, he talks about all the time bat path, and you know, we try and break down bat path and, you know, when he goes from the way he looked early in the season to the way he is now, you know, everybody's saying the pace of his lower half looks better. I just think it looks like mentally he's not thinking about it. When you watch him now and he talks about bat path the way he does, what's that mean to you?
Well, basically, you know, we've had a lot of time in the batting cage over the years.
Yeah.
And basically, being in a position where he can strike the ball with hard hit contact and having good swings, even if he swings and misses, just trying to get on plane with the ball. And I've heard this term a long time. I think JD Martinez talked about it a long time ago. I heard of it, kind of understood it, but, you know, in my day, it was more being on top of the ball, but being where the ball is at the point of contact, wherever you see it. And what we talk about a lot, which are the standards for him, is his eyes and his hands. If his eyes and his hands are synced up, where he takes pitches that I never could take. God was swinging.
Me too.
He takes some pitches in the zone, and if his eyes tell him yes, his hands will follow. And that, to me, puts him on plane. I don't think you need to think about plane. I just think that if your eyes are in position to let your bat naturally do things, I understand. To me, it's just like you'll hit it. You'll square it up. And you know, a lot of this has to do with over and over and understanding, but I think he simplified things. I think George Springer has really helped him along with his other teammates and staff. But George has really helped him quite a bit, understanding himself, staying connected, being synced up, and it's a simplified version of what we're all after. All Toronto fans are after. The Varshals are after it. Mm-hmm. Just having great at-bats and allowing his ability to come through as opposed to, you know, the whys. You know, he's very talented. He's much more talented than his mother and I. And so, of course, he gets most of the talent from his mother. Mm-hmm. So in the same respect, it's like he looks like a hitter at the plate.
Yeah, it's well said. Now, if you were watching them at home, obviously you do all the time, and you just sort of took your hand and put it over the top of his body, right? You just sort of hid his waist up, and you just watched his lower half. Is there something that would tell you with his lower half that everything's going to work the way you just mentioned it was going to work?
The only hiccup he's trying to overcome, which he's really cleaned it up a lot, is taking the two strides, you know, it's stride and then stride again, kind of being down too early and then having to kind of regroup. And that's always been a little bit of a Achilles heel for him. When he gets into the game, it's like trying to basically reach back for more, where less is more. And until you're in the box and controlling adrenaline, you don't really have a really good understanding of it. But when his lower half is right and he is on time, and we talk about being on time is basically when your foot comes down, you're in position to ready to strike. And so the timing sequences sometimes differ a little bit between pitcher to pitcher, wind up to stretch. But for the most part, he looks like a hitter. He looks like he's supposed to look. And that's sort of like we've been all been after. There have been, you know, ups and downs and valleys, but just trying to maintain that consistency each night when you're playing. Can you have an at-bat after a bat after a bat? And I know last night he struck out the first two at-bats, and I knew right away he wasn't seeing the slider, just didn't pick it up. The spin was great, and you know, Singer's a good pitcher. He had a really good slider. So it's one of those deals where, okay, hopefully he makes a mistake, but the approach was there and everything was right. And so just a matter of time, and, you know, fortunately he got a pitch he could hit, and he hit it. So, and that's the whole point, is that if you get a ball you can strike, we talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. I think if you go back in years previous, how many balls did he fall off underneath it, fall back, and then you don't get that extra one back. So it's a matter of him not following that ball off and really putting his bat on plane with the ball so I can strike it hard, and whatever happens after that. You know, I don't get caught up in hits. I don't get caught up in how many hits he's had. I just look for the at-bat, because I know if the at-bats are good, the process is good. And I know he knows this, that hits follow. It's always happened that way throughout his career. It's like when the process is right, he's going to be right, and the team will be right, and he's going to help the team.
You may have just answered this in talking about how important his playing to the ball is, but when you guys are working on his swing, you're in the cages in the offseason, and you see something like, hey, pitchers really challenged him on, say, the inner third of the plate last year, and he had a little bit of trouble with that. When you guys are working on things, how much are you trying to, you know, focus on that and fix that particular part, or just fix everything and assume that that'll, you know, hey, if everything else is working, everything else is connected, the inner third stuff or whatever the hole is, that'll take care of itself?
Good question. So last September, I had a chance to, Blue Jays had an off day, and Don Mattingly came, he asked me if I was going to be in town, and I was. And so Dalton, him and I went into the cage, and he showed me video prior to Dalton. He goes, this is what we need to get rid of. And not to be too technical, but rear end sticking out and hips weren't right. He goes, ideally we need to get there in the off season. We can't do it now. I said, well, we need to go to the cage and work on it, because there's no reason to wait, because I need to understand it. So when we do this process in the off season, I have a better feel, as opposed to just talking about it. And we did some drill work, and Don kind of honed in on how it's supposed to go. Now Dalton's got to figure it out, what works for him, what's going to work, what's the drill package that's going to work. So to your question of, is it working on the inside pitch, laying off the high fastball? To me, it was all about swing mechanics. Can your swing mechanics, and that's one thing George talked to him about a lot, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks ago. It's like swing mechanics. And that's what Don was after, the swing mechanics. Are your swing mechanics correct? And so working with his posture and making sure posture is correct so he can get off the swing that we're all excited about. So Don had pinpointed this real early. So going back to your question, do we work on the inside part? Do we work on... And Dalton's done that, and it doesn't equate to production on the field. And so you can work on it. It goes back to proper swing mechanics, and I think that's the one thing that he has really honed on and honed in on, because if he sees it and it is inside, I can get to it. So that's sort of the thing. And the one thing he hasn't done very often is swing at balls that are down and away for strikes, knowing that if I do swing at that, I'm out. So still trying to get that good pitch that he can do some things on. But Don triggered that right away, and then it followed up with George a little bit. And I just kind of stay out of the way now. I just kind of let them do their thing and don't talk a whole lot about it. And I talk more about his defense now than I do anything.
Yeah, speaking of his defense, why is he such a good outfielder in your mind?
You know, I've and being an outfield instructor, a lot of my career, a lot of guys do not understand how to teach outfielders. So why is he so good? I believe that there are certain guys that can just see the ball off the barrel from the outfield position and has an idea of where this ball might be going. I think he's innate enough where he sees things that a lot of other outfielders may not see, that as the ball is being in contact zone, he's able to get a quicker feel of the ball off the bat than some other guys. And look, it's not that easy playing the outfield. We all harp on, you know, why didn't he catch this? Why didn't he catch that? And there's all kinds of different parameters, but the spin of the ball between left and right field, but he sees things quickly. So allows him to move quickly and to create angles. And so, and he's learned, you know, by teaching the outfield, we always talk about, okay, angle. What's an angle? Well, real simply, you know, if you were standing in the outfield and you had a clock around you, so 12 o'clock was facing the plate, six, you know, 9-3, if that ball's hit to my right, I have got to get my so if you're playing defense, the first thing you're going to move is you're going to move your shoulders, and my hip will follow. If my hip goes, my shoulders will follow. So he's a football player, and he understood it. So if that ball's hit over my right shoulder, I've got to get my shoulder to 5 o'clock to create the angle. And if it's over my left shoulder, I got to get the 7 o'clock with my shoulder. I got to move it fast. And he can move his hips move really well, and his upper body really works well. He's so darn athletic. And so he is able to get quicker reads. His feet work. And when your feet work as an outfielder, chances are you have a chance to make some plays. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, I've seen him shake a lot of balls in my life when he was little, and I've seen him play the outfield, but to take it to this level, he's taken it to a whole different level that I never anticipated. And he's done making plays that I just sit back in my chair and I go back and I go, you got to be kidding me. So it's like he's taken it to another level for himself. He's worked hard on it, but he understands technique. He understands situations. I thought one of the best plays over in the San Diego series was when Tyler Wade was up and he had two strikes on him, and Tyler Wade's not going to hit it over his head. He was in closer and he made this little blooper that, if you were playing a little bit deeper, would have been borderline to catch, and a run would have scored. He was right there, caught it, ran it back to the infield and saved a run. I mean, those are little things that as an outfielder you play into, you understand situations, the hitter's strength, what he does. And so he does his homework, and you know, it's paying off for saving runs for those Blue Jay pitchers.
Yeah. It says a ton too that, you know, obviously he has grown up around baseball. He has seen a lot of fly balls, a lot of ball paths and things like that. And maybe our brains fill in some of the blanks when you have that much, but this is also a guy who's played catcher and third base a couple years ago. It's not as if he was, you know, every day in left field, every day in center field. It's pretty incredible. How much extra work was there when he found out, hey, you're probably not going to play that much catcher anymore, or in Arizona, we're going to use you in the outfield a lot more? I'd imagine preparing for catcher is its own whole separate thing off to the side. Making that transition has probably unlocked even more for him as an outfielder.
Well, it's unlocked a ton of athleticism that he can help the team with his legs. As an outfielder, what we're trying to do is we don't cover mistakes. Okay, so when a pitcher makes a mistake and he hits it a long way, we don't cover that. But what we want to do is we want to cover the ball that's just slightly mishit up in the air. Anytime the ball's got air, I want to be under it. So for him to transition to that, I mean, he transitioned from center field. He went over to right field into left field. So now moving over to right field, we had tons of discussions how to set up with your feet. And so we're always trying to cover gaps. Outfielders, we don't really cover the lines. Lines are irrelevant to us because gaps is where damage is. Lines are lines. If a guy hits it down the line, down inside the foul line, so be it. He's rewarded. If we can get to it, great. But we really want to cover the gaps because that's where the damage is. So trying to get him to understand his feet, how to align between left field and right field. And again, seeing the ball. Left field is the hardest one to play. I'll be honest with you. I mean, it's the most difficult play because you have these right-handed hitters, strong right-handed hitters, and when they clip this ball, and it's a short window. They clip this ball, you kind of have a real small window where you're looking at the ball and you've got to react much quicker than you ever do in right field. Even with left-handers hitting, for some reason, and again, this might be me, but the window in left field is so small, you really want to have somebody who can really read the ball quickly and not have to be Velcro to the fence and catch everything in front, being able to make plays in the gap and down the line and get to the fence. Right field, the window's more open. There's more room for error. You can see more often, especially with a ton of more right-handed hitters. So he just transitioned because he understands, and with the amount of knowledge I had with all some great outfielders, you know, just the great guys that I had to work with and I learned from, and Bill Verdon, who was the master at teaching outfield play when I was in Pittsburgh, he understood footwork and how important it was and what he needs to do in order to get in position. It's not cheating, but I am going to use my strength and what I need to do. I got to cover my weakness because we all move to one side or another better than others. So we got to make sure that we can always cover gaps in the corners, and my feet might align a little bit different. So nobody's the same, but he understood it very quickly and he picked up on it so doggone quickly. And it was like, he loved it.
Okay, what's Dalton's next step offensively? You know, we've seen him hit a home run off a lefty. We haven't seen that in a while. It looks like mentally he's able to walk away from a bad at bat. His next at bat, it's much better. In your mind, what's the next goal, the next step forward for Dalton offensively?
It's the steepness when things aren't going well. You know, for me, it's and he knows it. He should be going 0 for 20. 0 for 15. I mean, if you're having a good approach and you're swinging at strikes, good things will happen. Again, you're going to go for 40, you might hit three balls on the nose, and I get that. But I think he's graduating. You know, hitting is a process. Hitting, you know, I'd heard the other day Justin Turner didn't arrive until 29 and trying to figure things out. I mean, everybody goes through it. Everybody understands a little bit more about themselves. I think he's getting a really good understanding of who he is, what he can do. And, you know, I also think that the trade, you know, never admit it, but I think the trade had a lot to do with it, trying to do more than what should be capable of doing. Just be Dalton is really good. Mm-hmm. And I think it put a lot of more pressure on him than he'll admit. But he's just the consistency every at bat, knowing that, hey, when he comes up to the plate, you just see the approach and it's good. You know, and I know this is a result-orientated game, but for me, it's just like, You grind, you keep at the at-bats, you keep graduating, because it's every day. You just can't get lost in, you know, I go 0 for 4, it adds up to 0. You have four poor at-bats the next day, and you go 0 for 8, then four more poor at-bats, and you go 0 for 12. And then now we're trying to catch up, and he's never been able to get out in front. And I think, you know, he's in a position now where he can stay steady. Nobody's asking him to hit 330, but just good at-bats, help this team win. Driving some runs. I mean, runs are huge in our lineup. And so if he could just keep adding to it, and everybody's going to hit. I mean, you know, hitting is like when you're a hitting coach, Jerry, it's like the old Ed Sullivan show when the guy's spinning plates and spinning saucers. Never once do you get all seven plates spinning at the same time and the saucers all together. You're constantly balancing everything. And it's like you're just trying to juggle.
Yeah.
So hopefully in your lineup of nine, you got five good hitters. And, you know, four might be scuffling. You might get 6-3. You might get, you know, I might have 3, and in 6, and you got a whole lot of work to do. So just that consistency day in, day out. I know he'll prepare. I know he's preparing already for tonight against Walker. So it's like having an idea, having a plan. That's another thing Don talks about, having a plan at the plate. What is it you want to do? But again, getting a good ball to hit and putting a good swing on it and just having that consistency of at-bats. And that's the goal for him. And I want him to be happy. He loves Toronto. He loves the fans, but I mean, we liked Arizona, but we love where he's at. Mm-hmm. And he has fallen in love with Toronto, being part of it, loves it. I mean, as much as he wanted to be in the World Series, I think Toronto is one of the best places he's ever going to stop in his career, and hopefully it's for a long time.
Awesome. Yeah, that was great. That's great to hear that he's having a good time and starting to feel comfortable here. Gary, thanks so much for taking
the
time.
That's great stuff. You're the best, Gary. Thanks.
Right, you're welcome.
That's awesome.
My
good luck.
Gary Varsho, former major league outfielder and bench coach, outfield coach. Sounds like, it's easy to see where Dalton Varsho picked up a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
eh?
you can tell what goes into behind the scenes, right? And look, he sounded exactly like my father. If you talked to my father 25 years ago, that's what he would have sounded like. It's just, it takes a village. It really does. The families are so invested in their kids and, you know, what they're trying to do and what they're going through and just the mental grind of, you know, it's there. If we can just have the A swing more often, like just because he has talent and bat speed and power to the pull side and like everything will just, and the process of how you get there and how you stay there and, you know, what it goes into it and, you know, what you notice when it looks like now he goes 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. He doesn't let that carry over. The next day he was 3-for-4 with a homer. Like it's just sort of the process, and you can tell where he gets it from and the conversations he's having with his family, and that's pretty cool. It's just, you root for guys like that. Like, you can tell he's just a hard worker, and he's invested in Canada and the Blue Jays and himself and just wants to be a part of a championship. It's pretty awesome. Like, I could just, when I was listening to that, I could just hear my dad saying the exact same things to me, and it's almost, it gets you teared up. Like, it's just the investment that the families make that we don't talk about enough, and we should talk about more. It's just pretty cool listening to his dad and, you know, his mom. And, man, it's pretty cool. Just I'm sure his dad is watching, and it's like pause and start. And we worked on that, and way to go. And, you know, how dare you, and the jumps and the outfield and how he talks about that. It's pretty cool to listen to.
It's very, very cool. We heard from David Schneider's parents the other week when they were in town. Same kind of thing. Now, in Dalton's case, obviously the former major league dad. We're going to talk to Tim Kirkjian in the next segment. He had a great piece on Jackson Holliday coming up. And hey, that's a family that has some baseball in them and some real family investment in the kids as prospects as well. Before we do that, we got to give away some tickets.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long on Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Yesterday's question was, prospect Nick Frasso was part of the package to send which pitcher back to the Blue Jays in a 2022 deadline deal? Did you know that one?
I did not.
No. It was Mitch White. He was part of the Mitch White package.
Yeah.
Relief prospect when he was in Toronto, big radar gun readings, goes over to the Dodgers, had a really nice stretch as kind of a shorter stint starter last year.
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't know that.
What are you going to do? It's honestly, it looked like a big trade at the time because Mitch White is a major league starter.
Absolutely.
Nick Frasso, a pitching prospect that can hit 100.
Yep.
And now Nick Frasso hasn't pitched this year because of injury.
Mm-hmm.
Moises Brito, the other prospect the Jays gave up in that trade, he played in Dominican Summer League last year, but a 6'5 left-handed pitcher. Who knows? We'll check in on him in 5-6 years.
Yeah.
And then the Jays also got back Alex DeJesus, who's an infielder at AA now. So not a lot doing from that trade just yet.
Didn't work out.
All right. Today's question is maybe a little easier. Today's question to win tickets to see Jays Dodgers at Rogers Center on April 27th. That's the Saturday game. Here's your trivia question. Text the answer to 590-590. How many All-Star Game appearances did Justin Turner make as a member of the Los Angeles Dodgers? Text that answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Should be a fun series this weekend.
Yeah, it should be. I wonder if Ohtani will be booed. I wonder.
I don't know.
I mean, I
he got cheered a lot last year.
I would hope not. Because I don't. You know, I just wonder how Blue Jays fans feel about that. Like it's who they really want to point the finger and blame. That's the thing, right?
I don't think it's Shohei that they want to point the finger and blame that for that. That's my guess.
I hate this guy.
I think, yeah. I mean, it's an easy, obvious answer who you're pointing the finger at, but.
But you don't get the opportunity to boo those people very often, maybe Shohei wears it instead.
You do not. I mean, it's, again, I think the money was matched. We will continue to say that. The people that we know have, you know, and Jeff knows, have said out loud that, you know, the money was there. It was just the choice of that player to go where he wants to go. It's his choice, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to boo him, I guess, for not choosing beer, you got to boo a long list of free agents that chose somewhere else too, right? We don't know, but there were other offers that weren't taken.
Not a lot of those are unicorns.
Yeah, not a lot of those are Shohei Ohtani.
No, they're not.
Dodgers off to an interesting start too. They're only 13-11, but they've had some good stuff going. Yeah,
I think that's it, right?
Been really good.
Yeah, he's been great, right? I don't Look, their season doesn't start till October.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, are they going to win the West by a lot? Like, it's
11 years in a row now, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Diamondbacks are still a good team. They're a solid team. They're gonna claw and fight. But it's still sort of the Dodgers, and, you know, I don't think it's what they do in the regular season. It's what they do in October.
Yeah.
That's sort of where they're, you know, they got three Hall of Famers in a row in their lineup, which is
pretty
amazing.
Good.
And, you know, Freeman's gotten off to a slow start, too. So, you know, there's a lot of – I think hitting's down, and that's a question mark. It's a little bit of a head-scratcher why that is. Is it usage? Is it trying too hard? Is it expectations? Is it weather? There's a lot of things that go into that.
Yeah, it's a lot of things. People always float the baseballs, you know, when offense goes up and down and things like that.
Maybe.
Let's see what Tim Kirkjian thinks about it after a break here. Legend joining us, a co-host of Is This a Great Game or What podcast. He'll be with us next as Blair Barker continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Blair and Barker. I'm Blake Murphy filling in for the day. Jays back in action tonight, 7:40. It's Kevin Gausman against Michael Wacha on the Hill. We're going to talk to Tim Kirkjian of ESPN momentarily here. Before we get to him, Wacha tonight, changeup guy. Throws it about 33% of the time. That's a top 10 rate in all baseball. What do the Jays got to do differently or look for differently versus Singer last night?
Yeah, I don't think you can hunt changeup. I mean, I know a lot of people say that. You know, I think hear Buck Martinez say that a lot of times. You need to go up there looking changeup. I never could do that. I think that's very hard to do. I think you got to look velocity and adjust off speed. I think going up trying to sit on a changeup, he's throwing it a lot because it's working. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I got a good feel for it. You know, you can feel it for strikes. Like, you're getting called strikes for it. You get them in swing mode. I just don't think you can go up there and look for it. Like, going looking for a guy's best pitch is almost impossible to do, right? It's his best pitch for a reason, right? So, I think for me, always the simple approach, don't overthink it, would be get athletic as quick as you can and adjust to everything else. And if you do that, you've got a good chance of hitting the ball hard. That's all you're trying to do, right? Stay in the big part of the field, hit it hard. Yeah. You do that, hopefully you have a chance.
And there's good separation there, fastball changeup, but we're not talking about a 97, 98 mile an hour fastball, right? We're
you
talking
can
about
let it travel a little bit and see the changeup a little longer.
All right. Who we're going to see somewhere around baseball pretty soon is Hesse Kerstedt, number two overall pick in the 2020 draft. The Orioles have called him up to add to their litany of other prospects, including Jackson Holliday, who our next guest did a terrific piece on recently at ESPN. He is an ESPN insider and co-host of Is This a Great Game or What podcast. It's Tim Kirkjian. Thanks for joining us. Good afternoon. How we doing?
I'm well, fellas. How's it going with you?
Pretty well over here. Got to ask, I haven't had a chance to listen to today's podcast yet. We were coming on air as it came out, but you got to sit down. I mean, first of all, very, very cool that you and your son are doing this. Is This a Great Game or What podcast together? But you also got to sit down with Terry Francona today. Really looking forward to listening to that one. How was that chat? How was the catch up with Tito?
As always, it was hilarious. He is, in 45 years I've covered baseball, he is the single most entertaining, funniest guy that I've met in all the years. And he has such a great way with people, and he's so self-deprecating. So we just laugh for like 25 minutes. I mean, there might have been one serious question in there. Since we're doing a father-son podcast, we asked about his father, Tito Francona, of course, was a really good player in his day. Everything else was a laugh. He's not afraid to have a good chuckle. None of us should be afraid to have a good chuckle covering baseball. So we've had some really good interviews so far, but I think Tito was the best, and I'm not surprised because you can ask him anything, and he'll answer it, and it'll usually end up with a laugh.
Tim, did I hear him say that he threw a suit away?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Did I hear him say he threw his suit away? You were showing his suit. You asked him about his suit. He said something funny about his suit. Yeah.
Yeah. He worked with us at ESPN for 1 year, and I traveled around with him in spring training. They put me in charge of him because he has the worst sense of direction of anyone. But I have terrible sense of direction. But next to him, I'm Vasco da Gama. I mean, it's unbelievable. So among the many things we did that spring was we went and did like a live shot from Tampa where the Yankees train, and Tito forgot to bring a suit. So he went to Today's Man is what it was called. He bought a suit for $65. It was a pinstripe suit, and he wore it to the Yankees spring training that day, and when it was over, he threw it in the trash can. One of many stupid answers and funny answers that he had on our podcast today.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's an unbelievable one. I haven't listened yet, so sorry, but there's a Michael Jordan story in there. Can you give me a little bit of the Michael Jordan story, or are you making us wait for the pod?
Well, I'm going to spoil it for you, but he played in a basketball game when Michael Jordan was on the Birmingham Barons and Tito was the manager of the team. So he ends up with Michael's urging in a pickup game, which Tito wants no part of. And first time down the floor, he sets a screen for Michael Jordan. As if Michael Jordan needs a screen, as if he needs a pick so he can get the ball into the lane. He just screamed at him, get out of the way. And he went in and dunked it on somebody. That was just classic Tito Francona.
Okay, how about Jackson Holliday? You know, 1-for-30. Every hitter's went 1-for-30, but nobody wants to go 1-for-30 when they first come to the big leagues. How do you think that is going, just mentally, organization-wide? You know, they got a plethora of top prospects that they're going to call up sooner than later. Is this going to hinder them, sort of slow that process down, have them think twice about how much and when and how long they leave in there? How's the organization, you think, handling this?
Yeah, I thought he should have made the club out of spring training because he was swinging the bat so well. But they sent him to the minor leagues to get some more work at second base and against left-handed pitching. He tore it up at AAA. So I said, well, it's about time you called him up. I did not see this coming. Now, I'm the first to tell you, I never, ever, ever worry about a guy that goes in a deep slump in baseball because I firmly believe it's the hardest game in the world to play. And even the best hitters have a 1-for-30. But this is a bit troublesome because he's looked overmatched here and there. Mm-hmm. He doesn't play every day. Now they're sitting him against certain left-handers. So I think they're going to have to make another decision. And I don't think they're going to send him out. But if they do, let's not forget, Alex Rodriguez got sent out after failing his first time around. Mike Trout had a difficult time his first year in the major leagues. These things happen. I have no doubt that Jackson Holliday someday will be a really good player, and that someday will be soon. But he's off to a ragged start, and maybe we shouldn't be surprised because the pitching these guys see on a daily basis is just ridiculously good.
Tim, how do you think they know when to call these guys up? Like, is there a blueprint, some book? I mean, they got so many of them. Like, you would think they are trying to find a process that's right for the player, right? Obviously, they're in win mode now, and, you know, they're trying to teach and win at the same time. And they don't want these guys to go 1-for-30 to start their career. Is there that, you know, a blueprint, a book that will tell them how to do it, I guess, the right way?
No, there isn't. And that's, again, the beauty of the game is every situation is different. Every player is different. Now, if you want to keep Chris Bryant in the minor leagues for X amount of time in order to save his service time, yes, that's the blueprint. But the whole service time manipulation isn't what it used to be. This is all about feel for the game. This is all about watching a player play. This is all about going and talking to the kid when he's in the middle of a terrible slump and seeing if this is really affecting him or if he knows tomorrow I'm going to get three hits and this is all over. We've kind of lost our feel for the game. We've lost our instincts for the game, unfortunately, and we're basing everything on metrics and statistics rather than looking in the kid's eyes and seeing if this is really troubling him. Then maybe you send him out and get him some confidence to bring him back. But I don't think there's a blueprint, which is why baseball is so fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Tim, you mentioned, you know, having that conversation with the player, saying, is this really affecting him? Seeing how a 1-for-30 slump, is he wearing it? Is he, you know, is it changing his work? Is it in his head? you wrote this great piece at ESPN the other week about how Jackson Holliday growing up around clubhouses and things like that kind of informs who he is and how he operates. Do you think he's maybe in a position where he's better suited to handle a stretch like this and kind of stay above water?
Yeah, there's no doubt. Matt Holliday is his dad. Matt Holliday was a great major league player. His grandfather was a coach for years. If anyone can handle this, it's Jackson Holliday because of the environment in which he was brought up. I am a huge believer that as great as Ken Griffey Jr. and Barry Bonds were, they got extra help because they were in the clubhouse all the time with their exceptionally talented fathers. It's a similar case with Jackson Holliday. Trust me, he is not spooked by all this. He is not scared of the situation. I was amazed by his maturity and his poise, even when he was one for 11. Well, now he's one for 30 or so, and he's going to get challenged again. But again, this is why baseball is so great, is that really good players, really good prospects struggle all the time. And the question is, how do you deal with the struggles? There's no doubt in my mind he will handle this and figure it out eventually.
When I was young and I struggled a lot, I always got the, why are you trying so hard? And I used to laugh at that so much because, you know, it's sort of what the Jays lineup is going through, right? Expectations, you're a really good player. There's a lot, you know, coming into you being a big leaguer, there's a lot around that, right? You're not able to go one for 30. How dare you go one for 30? I just find that sort of the little part that's intriguing of stop trying so hard. And I think that gets back to, Tim, what you're just talking about. You can't teach experience. You have to live it. And I think them being good will allow a guy like this to sort of go through it and still win baseball games, which is what they're trying to do.
Right. Well, years ago, Bryce Harper came up and he's in spring training for the first time. He's like 18 years old. And Ryan Zimmerman told me, he said, I can't believe how good this guy is at 18. It's ridiculous. But he said he's got to go fail somewhere first before he gets to the big leagues. Because the last thing you want to do is fail for the first time in your baseball career in the major leagues, because it's so difficult up there. So maybe that's what's happened a tiny bit to Jackson Holliday, is he's been so great wherever he's gone, and now he's in the big leagues, he's facing pitching he's never seen before, and he's really failing in a very small sample for the first time. That can be a difficult adjustment.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, I haven't failed at the major league level. I failed at much lower levels than that. And yeah, it's even hard there. So despite this, the Orioles are still rolling just fine, right? Mm-hmm. They're 15-7, top of the AL East. A lot of their other players are coming through. Tim, when you look at where this team is and the fact that they still have a prospect pipeline coming, the fact that Mike Elias has stayed pretty patient in terms of when do we put chips in salary-wise or prospect-wise or whatever, where do you see this team going this year? Is there a point where they get more aggressive, or is it just going to be let these kids come up slowly, let them get acclimated, and hey, we're just going to happen to win 100 games again because these kids are so good?
I think they're going to be more aggressive because they showed that in the offseason when they went and got Corbin Burns. That was very un-Mike Elias-like, very un-Oriole-like to trade two pretty good young players for a guy who might be a one-year rental. To me, that was a sign of we are going for this, because even though we won 101 games last year, we didn't win a game in the playoffs. And I think they're looking at it like, all right, we're in a position now, better position than maybe any team in the major leagues, to go get whatever it needs for the stretch run, trade deadline, whatever. They have kids in the minor leagues that there are 5, 6, 7 of them that should be in the big leagues right now if they were in another organization. So, I mean, that Norfolk team, the AAA team, scored 97 runs in their first 11 games this year. I mean, they averaged almost 11 runs a game. I mean, it was unbelievable what they did. And, you know, Keston Hurstad is up now, and he can mash. That guy can really, really hit. Hurstad is, I was told last year by Brandon Hyde, he said, you know, this guy could be on our playoff roster. He's so ready for this. But they sent him out. He's up now, and he's going to hit, my guess, as soon as he gets here.
Tim, speaking of scoring runs, what do you think of the Jays lineup?
Look, sorry, fellas. I'm not a big fan of the Jays lineup. I think we all overrated the Jays lineup last year because we were so used to seeing all these huge names. Like, why aren't they scoring more runs? Maybe the runs they scored last year were exactly as many runs as they should have scored. They didn't have a cleanup guy the whole season. I mean, Vladdy Guerrero didn't have any real, you know, support behind him. They're, what, 10th, 11th in the league in runs scored right now.
Mm-hmm.
Vladdy's hitting bad luck. Bo Bichette hasn't really gotten going yet. And I think they're a better offensive team than we've seen so far. But anyone who thinks that this is the, you know, the Blue Jay team that just bludgeon you with offense, well, they gave offense away to try to get better defensively, and they did. But they're not a particularly good offensive team, and that's going to be dangerous in a division that has the Orioles and the Yankees and others.
Yeah, they're 22nd in runs scored with 91. That's not great.
No, that's not going to cut it. Tim, with respect to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., we talk about him a lot. We're in a day-to-day here. Obviously, people get up on him, people get down on him, and back and forth. At the kind of zoomed-out level, at the national level, is there a confidence that Vlad can get back to being the better version of him? Maybe not 2021 level. That's probably long gone at this point. But to a better version of him? Or is it starting to set in that it's possible this is who Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is?
No, I think he's better than this. And this is pretty good, but we're expecting great after 2021. We're expecting great every year. Well, he's really young. As you guys know, he's the youngest guy in the team last year. I think better years are ahead for him. I think they need to get more runners on for him. They need to give him more, you know, protection in front and behind. And I think he's going to be a really, really good hitter for most of his career. But after 2021, we thought he's going to be a great hitter every single year. Maybe he's not that guy, but I think he's better than he is right now. From the stats, I believe, show that he's hitting the ball pretty hard. He's not hitting in very good luck right now. That's going to change. But he plays on my team any day because he is still a really dangerous hitter.
Tim, do you think Major League Baseball has an umpiring problem? I had to ask, Tim.
I don't think so. Look, you're asking the wrong guy. I am a big umpire guy. I mean, what Hunter Wennelstad did yesterday, I just don't understand that at all. When I see certain umpires like Angel Hernandez have a bad day, that's a bit worrisome. But overall, I think umpiring is really hard to do. I think the average fan wouldn't last five pitches behind home plate in a major league game before saying, get me out of here. It's too scary. It's too dangerous. And the ball moves way too fast for me to figure out if it's a ball or a strike. But I don't think we have an umpiring problem. But every once in a while, something pops up like yesterday that makes you slap your forehead and say, all right, this can't happen like that.
Yeah. For anyone who missed it, Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, tossed from a game by Hunter Wennelstad for something that a fan said, not something that Aaron Boone said. Pretty amusing if you're not the Yankees and you're not Aaron Boone. I certainly found it amusing. Tim, with respect to that, you know, the difficulty of calling balls and strikes and things like that, it comes up every once in a while. Do you have an appetite and interest in seeing something like the challenge system at the major league level? Or for you, is that more of a, hey, keep it in the minors thing?
Well, I'm going to need to see it work in the minor leagues for a few more years, but it's coming to the major leagues. An automated strike zone is coming to the major leagues. I'm pretty sure about both of those. I'm just not sure what the time frame is. And I have, again, I support the umpires in this respect. There is a strike zone on television that fans at home can see. Every time you miss a call, a fan can see it at home. They can see it better than you can see it, and you're standing right on top of it. Imagine if I were writing a story and I had someone peek it over my shoulder, and every time I had a typo or used the wrong word, someone would say, no, that's wrong. You shouldn't use that. Well, that would make me uncomfortable. I think we need to help the umpires a little bit more. Exactly how we do that, augmented reality, something like that, I'm not sure. But we're headed for, you know, pure technology taking over the strike zone. And I'm just not sure that's the right thing to do. I still think the human element is really important in every facet of the game.
All right. Well, Tim Kirkjian, thanks so much for taking the time. This has been a blast. Can't wait to listen to the podcast. with Terry Francona. I think it's so cool you're doing a father-son podcast with Jeff as well. Really appreciate you taking the time out.
Thank you so much.
Okay, fellas. Thank you. See you
later.
Tim Kirchen, ESPN Insider, of course, and co-host. It's called Is This a Great Game or What? Podcast. Him and his son, and this week, Terry Francona.
Yeah, he thinks differently than I do about the umpires.
Yeah, you want the challenge system?
No, I don't. I don't want that.
Oh, just don't want umpires?
No, I do. I want them to be held accountable, just like players. Again, I've said this a bazillion times. You start rolling their name across the bottom of the screen, lack of performance, whatever that is, right? There's so many stats now that you can throw out to grade an umpire. I'm in that camp where if you've done it long enough, there's no excuses for you to miss call after call after call. It's almost like it seems like it's on purpose. Tim makes it sound like it's not. It's just human element. Like, it's so hard. They move so much. You know, they're calling it from center field, obviously. It's very hard for them to see it. I think it's a simple fix. You start sending the bad ones down, or you just quite frankly release them. When I was bad, guess what happened to me? I got released. I've been released 4 times. Twice on the last day of spring training. Sucked. It's the worst thing in the world. It will teach you how to be better quicker. If you want to be a big leaguer, you sort of know what it takes, right? If you continue to be allowed to do what the umpire did yesterday, like, just, there's no excuse for that. This is the big leagues. It's just like, it, enough. Like, it's the greatest game in the world in my mind. It's my opinion. But sometimes it's mind-boggling how Major League Baseball can't get out of their own way. And I just don't understand that part of it. They don't care if they roll our names across the bottom of the screen and tell everybody how bad we stink. Why don't they do that to umpires?
Yeah,
and that's the part of it I just don't get.
And look, we gave away tickets to Dodgers, Blue Jays this weekend. Everyone's going down there to see Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers against the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
No one's going down there. I hope I win tickets on Blair and Barker to go see Hunter Wendelstedt.
Absolutely. It's just, it's mind-boggling. And for Major League Baseball to not come out, have they made some statement about how bad that looks and we feel embarrassed and it'll never happen again and it's been taken care of? None of that. If a baseball player does, again, I said this to you, what's the equivalent of a player? I guess it's that we've seen pitchers being sent down for not handing the ball right to a manager. And then just we see umpires doing that. It's obviously he didn't like Booney.
Yeah.
It's just the relationship between those two is just not there. And he's looking for a reason. And it took some pain in the first. It's just, I just don't get it. I never will understand it. And Major League Baseball has got nobody to blame but themselves. They let this get out of control enough that you get what you get. And more power to them, because I just don't see that part of it ever changing. Like, now it's just too late to start rolling their name across the bottom of the screen. Should have done a long time ago.
Yeah, should be some level of accountability.
Absolutely.
There. In any position of authority, your job's to have the cooler head, right? Like, you're a parent, you can't let your kid push your buttons and you blow up.
Whenever
right?
a Jay stinks, you go run and stick the microphone in Bo Bichette's face. Why don't you do that to an umpire? Make him come out, stand in front of 15 reporters and answer the question, why'd you do it?
Yeah.
Why did you look that way? Why did you make Major League Baseball look bad? Make them answer the question. If you're not going to, you know, find them out loud or send them down or whatever it is you're going to do to them, at least make them answer for it in front of somebody, just like the player does. You're at the big leagues. You're not in the minor leagues. You have to answer for things that you do wrong. That's life. I just, that part of it for me, I never will understand it. Look at it. Look how bad it looked.
It's all anyone was talking about in baseball yesterday.
It had nothing to do with the players on the field. It had to do with some umpire not knowing because he doesn't like a manager. It just makes me frustrated.
Yeah, and completely understandably.
Yeah.
All right, we got about a minute and a half left here. We got Michael Wacha against Kevin Gausman tonight. No lineups out yet. We talked a little about Wacha and his changeup before. What are you looking for from Kevin Gausman tonight?
Yeah, I think it's the velocity. I mean, that's the sort of the be-all, end-all, right? It's when he's got it, it makes the split finger that much better. And you know, I think he's talking about when he's good, it is weak contact and swing and miss on both pitches. So I think the velocity will help. He looks like he's more comfortable with that. Hopefully the weather is, you know, it's not cold there. I don't think it is. From what I've heard, it's not cold in Kansas City. So hopefully that's not the case. And, you know, he can go out and he's limber and loose and getting good extension and getting some called strikes on the split finger down. That would be good. And the more that thing's moving, the few called strikes that he gets, the velocity on the fastball will help. Elevate the fastball, crowd the righties with the fastball, do the same with the lefty. he should be fine again. I think scoring first will help too, right? You know, Slorgie's knots is fine. Aim down the middle, have that thing moving all over the place, do it with velocity, do it with some vinegar, he'd be fine.
Yeah, talented lineup, but an inexperienced lineup who probably, you know, maybe not don't have the discipline to lay off that splitter if it's cooking. 73 degrees in Kansas City right now, by the way, so hopefully you're doing all right. Thanks for having me today, Kevin. I appreciate it, man.
That was wonderful. Great job. Yeah, that was
thanks,
a lot of fun.
Man. This has been Blake Murphy and Kevin Barker. Jeff Blair is back with you for Blair and Barker post-game on Jays Talk, so make sure you get your calls and texts ready for that. Blair and Barker will be back in the usual spot 2 to 4 tomorrow. You've got Kipper and Bourne coming up next to discuss a Toronto Maple Leafs playoff victory, an unbelievable Austin Matthews game last night. Kipper and Bourne will break that down for you. The Edmonton Oilers scored more goals than the Blue Jays could ever hope to score runs as well. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.